Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. A quick update on LQ ISO, which continues to grow at just an incredible rate. The site now has over 330 distribution versions available from just shy of 600 mirrors. It has also facilitated just shy of 2 million Linux downloads, which is going to be a great milestone. We added all the statistics on the left-hand nav of the site, so if you're interested in the stats, you can see them in near real time at any time. So it's clear you should visit iso.linuxquestions.org for all your Linux distribution download needs. And if you see a distribution missing, make sure to click the Suggest Additions link and let us know. It is a community-built site, and while the members of the community that have been maintaining the site are doing an absolutely fantastic job, they might be missing or just completely unaware of a certain distribution that you like. Obviously, all the major ones are in there at this point, but there are certainly probably some fringe ones that are not. So that link brings it to their attention and allows you to suggest new distros, new mirrors, etc. Now also, be sure to suggest LQISO if someone asks you where to download the latest Linux distribution. The site is growing by leaps and bounds, but of course, word of mouth is going to help the site tremendously. Next, a reminder that to celebrate the launch of TrioQuestions.org, all software in the TrioQuestions store is a full 20% off for a limited time, and you have just short of 2 weeks left to take advantage of that offer. Now, if you'd like to take advantage of the offer, just shop at software.trioquestions.org and use TQ20 as a coupon code. Lastly, I'd like to thank everyone who gave feedback on the recent hardware upgrade. The consensus is definitely that the search has been vastly, vastly improved, and the response has just been overwhelming and extremely encouraging. So with that upgrade out of the way and search finally sorted out, at least from a performance standpoint, we'll now focus on some of the new features that we've been planning. So stay tuned. Now on to the news. The first story I have is native port of Google Earth comes to Linux. So when I saw that a native port of Google Earth would be coming soon, and I announced it last week on the podcast, I didn't think that it would be coming this soon. With the help of Iclias, Google has ported Earth to Linux using Qt and OpenGL. I had a chance to download it onto a couple of machines now, and for the most part, things do seem to work okay. For their first native port ever, things look quite smooth, and I'm sure that Iclias had quite a bit to do with that. Here's hoping that the response in this port now is positive enough to warrant more native ports from Google. It's a great first step, and I think it's an indicator of the progress that Linux is making. One thing I would like to note, at least for me, Earth seemed to crash almost immediately on the machines that had the NVIDIA non-open source driver installed. After a little poking around, it seems like it doesn't like the libgl that comes with the NVIDIA driver. So if you pointed to the system version, that solved the problem immediately on both machines that we ran into that problem with. But aside from that, things really did seem to run smooth. The performance was as good as and comparable to the version of Earth I've used on other operating systems. And like I said, it's just fantastic to see them following up. And the fact that this is native really is great. The next couple of stories here are going to break from tradition a little bit and report on multiple Microsoft stories in one podcast. I typically try to keep things mostly Linux and open source related. And while Microsoft is kind of orthogonally related to Linux, I guess, I try not to focus on them too much. But there's just so much news this last week that it really couldn't be avoided. So the first Microsoft story I have is, can Windows and open source learn to play nice? Bob Muglia, who's the senior vice president of Microsoft's server and tools business, talked about this question with eWeek at the recent TechEd conference. Now, a side note on the TechEd conference, I've been informed that there was at least one LQ shirt on the floor at TechEd, which is a large Microsoft conference. I'm trying to get a picture of that now, and if I do, I'll post it to the blog and probably to the site also, but it's good to know there was at least one LQ shirt there. Back to the eWeek article, one quote that stuck out to me was the following. Quote, a commercial company has to build intellectual property. While the GPL, by its very nature, does not allow intellectual property to be built, making the two approaches fundamentally incompatible, end quote. And that was Bob that said that. I think that's one problem with Microsoft and a large percentage of other commercial software companies. I think a commercial software company should have to build value, not just intellectual property. So someone should tell Red Hat and MySQL AB and the other myriad commercial companies making money off the GPL software that it's just not allowed and incompatible. But aside from that, he did have some good things to say. And you could probably tell that I do have a little bit of a cold. I apologize if it's hard to understand me this week. I'm just getting over it, actually, which is why this podcast is a little bit late. One problem here is that Microsoft is going to have to take the first step here, and it's going to have to be a fairly large step. The company just has a sordid history of business partnerships being completely predatory and interoperability really meaning embrace and extend. So I think what we may be seeing here is Microsoft reaching the acceptance stage. They've ignored us, they've laughed at us, they fought us, and I think now they're realizing that open source is for real. And while they still have a dominant position in many, many places now, things are demonstrably changing, and they just don't have that stranglehold that they used to. So as I've wondered before, though, I'm not sure Microsoft is quite yet ready to change alongside us. Speaking about tech ed more generally, this topic did seem to pop up quite a bit, not just with this particular person. Jeremy Moskowitz called for a truce between Windows and Linux. Now, he's not actually a Microsoft employee, but an outside consultant. I can't see that we really need a truce, because to be honest, I don't know that there's much of a quote-unquote war going on. And if there is, I think it would probably be Microsoft the only one fighting it, for at least from what I can tell. You see, Linux and open source develop to open standards, and those open standards are available to anyone. By doing that, interoperability really becomes a non-issue. Anyone who develops to the standard is inherently able to work with anyone else who develops to that standard. The fact that Microsoft doesn't really develop to many standards, and the standards they do develop, they often embrace and extend them to the point that even if you develop to the same actual standard, you lose interoperability. That doesn't make a war. Now, one funny thing that I saw that Jeremy said was, quote, Windows may have more patches, but Microsoft releases them more frequently and fixes things more quickly, end quote. The fact that he thinks a company that has a specific day to release patches, which is the quote-unquote Black Tuesday that Microsoft has, releases things quicker than anyone is kind of amusing to me. And I think it backs up a common trend I'm seeing here where people that have a lot of knowledge in the Microsoft world really don't understand the open source kind of paradigm and how we do things and don't really look closely at the open source community and make these kind of assertions, and they're misguided. I don't think there's any malice or intentional FUD being spread here, but it's clear that they don't understand the other side. One last note on this story. If Microsoft does think there is a war right now, I'd like to invite them to join the party at any time. But they have to understand that that means joining the party. No predatory practices, no anti-competitive behavior, no monopoly abuse. Open standards is the way for open source and proprietary software to interact. Clean and documented interfaces and APIs means that the licenses of the two interacting programs don't even come into play. So there, the truth will set you free. The next story I have is Broken Windows Theory. This is an interesting post from a former member of the Windows team on why he thinks Vista slipped. Now, he is still with Microsoft, it should be noted, and this was posted to the MSDN blogs. He's just no longer on the actual Windows team. It's clear at this point that Vista is complicated, almost certainly more complicated than it needs to be. An architectural diagram, according to this post, of Windows would suggest there are more than 50 dependency layers and a bunch of circular dependencies. So how circular dependencies made their way into this thing, I have absolutely no idea. While Microsoft may not like Unix, it's clear they need to understand what many people would call the Unix way. It's what allows a decentralized and largely uncoordinated team of disparate developers to come together and write something like the Linux kernel, a modular and logical separation of functionality brought together by standard interfaces, which is kind of a carryover from the last story that I had. Windows, on the other hand, seems to just be a jumbled mess that requires all developers to understand just far, far too much of the puzzle. There's no separation of anything from what this post would indicate. I think it's also telling to see just how out of control the management scheme seems to be at Microsoft. And this is a common thread from Microsoft employees on blogs, both at the MSDN blog site, which hosts many, many Microsoft blogs, or at things like Mini MSFT. I guess that we'll see a dramatic change after Vista actually ships, but by then it could be starting to get too late. Microsoft is losing a lot of ground here. Linux is steadily gaining both ground and, at least as importantly, mindshare, while OS X continues to deliver on features that were cut from Vista long ago. Meanwhile, Google is looming from the other direction, and that really is just the beginning. The lack of innovation, I think, is finally catching up to Microsoft. They're having an extremely tough time replacing the talent they lost during the bubble, and it's really showing. They're playing catch-up in pretty much every place they compete. What's worse for them, even their proprietary formlets, which is one of the tried-and-true forms of lock-in, are under fire. So, clear things are shaky at best. Now, don't be too worried about Microsoft. With $50 billion in the bank and an entrenched install base, Microsoft isn't going away anytime soon. But I think it's clear, and I mentioned this in the last story, the kung fu death grip that they've had on the industry has loosened, and I don't think it will ever be regained to the point that they had it. Where exactly the company goes from here is an interesting question to me, and I still wonder if they can fully grasp the potential that still remains with the current leadership in place. Now that ties directly into the next story. Bill Gates to step down from Microsoft. I thought Scoble leaving was big news here, and this, I think, certainly trumps that. Microsoft announced plans for a July 2008 transition for Bill Gates. I'm going to read a little quote from the press release here. The company announced that Chief Technical Officer Ray Ozzie will immediately assume the title of Chief Software Architect and begin working side-by-side with Gates on all technical architecture and product oversight responsibilities to ensure a smooth transition. Similarly, Chief Technical Officer Craig Lundy will immediately take the new title of Chief Research and Strategy Officer and will work closely with Gates to assume his responsibility for the company's research and incubation efforts. Lundy also will partner with General Counsel Brad Smith to guide Microsoft's intellectual property and technology policy efforts. End quote. So this will certainly begin to usher in a new era for Microsoft, and I think one they sorely needed at this point. Ozzie has a much different outlook on things than I think either of the two chiefs in Microsoft's history have had. And I think with this promotion, we'll see an even bigger focus on services. With the Microsoft Live, they've really been moving towards services pretty heavily, and I think that will only be increased and also accelerated with Ray Ozzie stepping up. Now, for Bill, he really stepped down at an opportune time. The stock is sagging, the Vista debacle is raging, and competition's really heating up. In the end, you have to give him credit for putting in the time he does for as long as he has. And from all accounts, he puts in a huge amount of time. What's interesting is he seems to be taking the path of the barons of yesteryear, who in increasing years turned into benefactors of humanity in order to ensure their legacy. Now, this brings up one thing that I don't often see talked about. The Gates Foundation really does do more good than they get credit for. Now, you may not agree with how Bill got his money, but what the Gates Foundation does is extremely commendable and should be applauded. I think I speak on behalf of everyone in wishing Mr. Gates the best in his future endeavors. And this really ties pretty much into the last story I have for you, which is, should Steve Ballmer leave Microsoft? It seems that Business 2.0 thinks so. From their article, since Gates stepped down as CEO in 2000 in favor of Ballmer, the company has floundered technically and strategically. As the company's chairman, chief software architect, and supposed visionary, Gates deserves blame for missing the wave of web-based software that has propelled both Google and Yahoo. But Ballmer has made gaffes of his own in his longtime role as head of the company's business side. They include an undistinguished push into business applications to compete with Oracle, financial maneuvers that have failed to steal their stock, which has slumped 16% so far this year, and continuing antitrust problems in both the United States and Europe. End quote. And not a very flattering summation, is it? Now, I asked if Bill and Steve were holding the company back about 18 months ago. So what do I think now? With Bill phasing himself out, the company is at a crossroads. I don't think that they can turn the corner with the current CEO in place. He just has the old Microsoft too ingrained in him, and I don't think he'll allow the company to grow in the direction it needs to in order to turn itself around. And if you think about it, Steve, I think, really typifies what people don't like about Microsoft. He's been at the head during many of the antitrust cases, especially in Europe, and I think he just kind of is the quintessential strong arm behind Microsoft. So I think it's clear at this point that he probably should step down in the next 2 years, but somehow I don't think that hubris will let him. I'd guess he sincerely thinks that he can turn things around. And whether that will change in the next 2 years as, you know, kind of as Bill Gates phases himself out and Ray Ozzie and Mundy come more to power, it'll be interesting to see how Steve reacts to that and if it changes his perspective on anything. And that, of course, remains to be seen. Now, the next question logically that arises from there is, if he does step down, who takes his place? Now, from the reading that I've done, the odds are on one of the two Kevins. Kevin Turner, the current COO, seems like the most favored at this point, in at least in the mass media. Now, the fact that an ex-Walmart exec may be the CEO of Microsoft is just absolutely stunning to me. From the reports I've read of the moves he's made since coming aboard, this one seems like a bad choice to me, at least from Microsoft's perspective. Could be good for the open source side, I guess. They already have morale problems at Microsoft, and he really seems to be exacerbating them. Multiple places I read seem to think he was the one behind the mandatory unpaid week off for contractors, which really hurt morale quite a bit. So I don't know enough about the situation, to be honest, to know why he's the favorite, but at least on the surface, it doesn't seem to make sense, really on a couple levels. Now, Kevin Johnson, who's the co-president of Microsoft's Platform and Services division, is a longer-time Microsoftie, and at this point, I don't know if that's for or against him, but he seems like a little bit better of a fit, to me at least, and like I said, I've not looked into this too deeply. Now, with Ozzie and Mundy filling Bill's shoes, the short list really seems to end there. And if they dare to go outside the company for a replacement, I just doubt that at this time. But I guess that would depend heavily on just how long Ballmer stays. So quite a bit of news at Microsoft, and really a company that is going to be changing quite a bit, it looks like, in the near to mid-future. What repercussions that have for us, really, it remains to be seen. If they get a CEO in there that understands the benefits they could gain from really stopping being predatory and actually, instead of the lip service, change some of their practices, they really could benefit and it could turn the company around quite a bit. I know people love to hate Microsoft, but people love to hate IBM not that long ago. And if you look at how they've changed their reputation around, it certainly can be done. Whether it will be done, of course, remains to be seen. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastalley.com and vote for us.